You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I'm going to have the pleasure of speaking with two women, actually, Pippa Jarvis and Emma Fleming. Pippa Jarvis, both currently living in South Africa, one from South Africa and one from the United States. Pippa Jarvis is an educator and the managing director of two organizations, TLC Children's Home and Embrace Village, both caring for neglected children and supporting their moms and their families with TLC, oddly enough, because she cares about people and she cares about communities. And Pippa is an extremely dedicated and smart woman negotiating and navigating the bureaucracies that stand in the way of meaningful things being done in South Africa, especially for neglected families and neglected children in a land that is still to this day, although better than it was, stricken with significant challenges, poverty, et cetera. Emma Fleming is the social media director for those organizations, and it's actually how I got to meet Pippa. Emma was a student in a school that I worked at years ago, New Road School, and I found my conversation with them both very inspiring, and I hope you enjoy it. Unfortunately, our conversation was interrupted midstream when Pippa's connection to the internet or her difficulty in her computer created a gap. And with editing, I was able to trim that gap down to about 30 seconds at the most. So if you're just listening, there will be about 14 minutes in, a slight pause. And I think we were able to pick up kind of where we left off. So you should be able to follow the conversation we were having. And now Pippa Jarvis and Emma Fleming.
And then anything we don't want, we can always just edit out. So here it is. Well, welcome to Curiosity Invited, and thank you both for being here. Pippa Jarvis and Emma Fleming. So in my proper introduction of Pippa, I spoke of her as I didn't know if you were the founder, but I knew that you were the managing director of TLC Children's Home. And
My mother was the founder.
When did she begin it?
In 1993, when South Africa was just in the cusp of its democracy and yes. Also in the height or part of the height of the HIV/AIDS pandemic. So a lot going on in our country at the time.
So your mom started it. Wow, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And I was 16.
Has she formally passed the baton or?
Yes. Yeah, she retired in 2015 and I took over the reins and we've been going since then.
And does she still look over your shoulder and say, what are you doing that for?
No, she's very gracious and she manages her own lane very nicely.
That's good. That's great. But you are the director at the moment. And Emma, what do you do there?
Well, so I'm a specialized intern, so I'm not a normal intern because I have such a high degree. I have a bachelor's in social work and a master's in public health. So I originally came on to help do the Mother's Hope Project. So it was to help mothers in need. And my role kind of switched. So now I'm in charge of social media as well as fundraising.
You're in charge of social media. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm
now there Pippa's, is a thing in the world.
Yeah, it is. God. And I'm Pippa's personal assistant as well. So, you know, Pippa will say, hey, do this. And I'll say, I'll do it. I got you. So I'm her marketing director. I try to, you know, sell Pippa out to the world.
And I got it. I get it. And the other thing I should say, just truth in advertising. I know Emma from a previous lifetime. I don't mean that in the previous lifetime way, but in the in an earlier time in each of our lifetimes. Emma was a student at the school that I ran. So I think you were a junior when I left, right?
Yeah,
I left at the end of your junior year.
I think you were end of my sophomore year because I graduated in 2014. So it could have been junior.
Yeah, no,
year.
That was junior year because I left at the end of 2013.
Okay, yeah. So. No, I mean, I came into that school halfway in the middle of the year, didn't know anyone, and was just fully accepted into the community. It was an amazing experience going to that high school.
Yeah. And I know you're smart because, like, you know, I know when we went to school, so.
Yeah. I like to think I am.
And now you're a married woman.
Yes, yes. I got married in January to a South African that I met at a small little bar in a very small little town. And we fell in love, and I was deciding, I was graduating with my master's, and I was like, what was I gonna do? I thought about the Peace Corps, got into the Peace Corps, then got denied for medical reasons. And then that's when I stumbled upon TLC. And I was like, okay, Pippa, you're doing my dream job, because after my first trip to South Africa, I always knew this is home. This is where I want to be. So I'm very, very okay, lucky.
So now the big reveal. So TLC Children's Home, what is it? What does it do? Why did it get started? We know your mom did it.
Yes, it was started by my mother, as we discussed. She was really moved at the time by the plight of children in the system. So because of the transition from apartheid to democracy, and because of the huge numbers of children coming into the system as orphans and vulnerable children from consequences of the HIV/AIDS pandemic, she really wanted to make a difference and an impact. And so our family decided we were going to do what we could to make the world a better place. And we started bringing in children who had no other options, trying to raise them within our family for as long as they required until we could find other permanent families for them. We never wanted children to live in institutional life for their whole lives. That was never our goal. We always believed in building families. And so for 30 years, we did that, over 1,000 children through our home, and just really working hard to be that bridge as they transitioned from vulnerable to amazingly well looked after children, and then into families that were then permanently their home. But South Africa's had lots of transitions, not just from democracy. There's been some other really big struggles in our country. And one of them is that our government social service is really problematic. And so we no longer run a children's home in the residential care center sort of sense of the word. Now we run it more as a daycare center for children in crisis. So the children do return back to their families, because our goal is to keep families together. But we offer really intense support during the day for families who have food insecurity issues, gender-based violence issues, unemployment, children of foreigners, where they can't access, you know, healthcare, education, or employment. So these are children who are struggling with, you know, not having enough food on the table, not feeling safe at home, having no opportunities educationally. So we've evolved from a children's home to a children's center, but still focused on keeping families together.
And so are the names TLC and Embrace Village sort of interchangeable?
So they are becoming that way. So Embrace Village was set up as a not-for-profit company, whereas TLC was a not-for-profit organization. And it hamstrung us a little bit in terms of being able to generate our own income. If you're a not-for-profit organization, you're entirely charitably driven. we as a not-for-profit company allows us to take some of our learnings of the last 30 years and translate them into workshops, into training, start to generate some projects that are initiatives that will drive some funding into the organization and into the families. So we've got a very integrated approach. For example, a family that arrives here in need could very easily fit into our system and be developed to a place where they are helping generate the income and reaping some rewards from that, not just in terms of accessing the support we provide, but actual real money in their bank accounts from what they produce.
And so at any one time, how many kids, families, et cetera, are you working with?
So currently we have 45 households that we support, and of those 45, there's approximately 115 beneficiaries. That includes parents and children because we are a holistic approach. So our philosophy is called Reviving the Village. The idea that everyone has the right to belong, but that everybody in a village gets comfort, they get connection, and they get a place to contribute their energy. So we work really hard to draw all of that in appropriate spaces for the beneficiary. If it's a child, it's much more around comfort and connection. If it's an adult who's wounded, then it's around connection and contribution. And together we're building the threads back of the social fabric. So we work really hard to make sure that everyone finds their place and is embraced in that, even when they're a bit messy as a human being. We know that when we're wounded, we're our messiest selves. So we try to encourage a mindset that says we are accepting and holding the space for you while you find your feet. And then when you do, the more you, so we try to take people from a high level of dependence and low contribution to a high level of contribution and low dependence. It's a switching up of the narrative, but it takes work. It's messy and it's not always that pretty, but the end results are beautiful and we see it every day. It's really wonderful.
Well, so obviously you don't need to answer anything that I ask, but what does messy look like? What does that mean?
So when people have come from a place of trauma, their behavior is often instinctual. So, I'm sure you've come across how brains are developed. When our thinking brain is unable to be reached, it's because we're stuck in our emotional brain. People who have experienced a long time of trauma, and in South Africa, it's chronic trauma. This is trauma that just, it doesn't go away. You are not safe anywhere you go. You don't have enough. People are hostile. It's like just trauma upon trauma. That it determines your behavior, and it's often antisocial because it becomes very selfish. It becomes very internally focused. And so we're trying to create a safe place for that. But that means you have to accept the fact that sometimes people will be triggered and they won't be kind. They won't be patient. They won't be self-controlled. And you have to hold that space for them so that when a mother is losing her sense of humor, we always say losing your salvation, when you're behaving badly, you need people around you who say, I get it. I understand. I've been there. This is how we do it when that happens. And it's just holding that silent, we say practicing the pause. You know, when people have a chance, when they're feeling flustered, if you can just get them to hold that space for a moment and practice a pause, they can often make a much better choice in terms of how they behave. So we try to provide that little quiet space for them.
When you speak about that with other people who are not necessarily participants in the program, do you ever get the reaction that's like, well, no, what they need is more discipline, or what they need is in. And I'm asking that because I know, you know, my attitude when I was working at the school was, you know, kids, sometimes parents, but kids would act out, as they say, right? You know, act out and wouldn't be behaving the way we all want. And my response was most often talking to them, and people would be pissed off at me because well, what, you're not doing any, you're not punishing them, they need punishment. It was, well, and my attitude was always, well, you know, it takes people a while to get to be who they are. So it's going to take a little time for them to get to be somebody else.
Exactly, so, to undo that behavior. So we love little like phrases, catchphrases that help remind people. So for example, I said practicing the pause. That's like a little mantra around here. So when you see somebody struggling, you say, let's practice the pause. But there's a couple of other ones we use. And it's, of course, in our environment, it's lucky because we also have children. So often when we're teaching the lesson, we use the children as the example, although it's as appropriate for the adult.
Sure.
So we often say needy isn't naughty. So children who are acting out is because there's not a need that's been met. There's a need that's not been met. Let me say that. Mm-hmm. And so when we meet the need, the behavior will change. But you have to give them the tools to be able to change, to be able to behave differently. So it's about equipping their toolbox. It's about understanding that needy behavior isn't naughty behavior. And then there's one part that we try to explain to adults is that especially people from trauma, you can halve their chronological age if they've been exposed to trauma. So their behavior will reflect the halved chronological age. So a 30-year-old who's losing their sense of humor will behave like a 15-year-old. And a 15-year-old who's losing their sense of humor will behave like a 7-year-old. And you can really see it in action. And when you see it, it's so much easier to manage because you don't take things personally. You start to recognize that, oh, actually some of that behavior, well, none of that behavior is about me. It's all about what's going on with that person. And when you don't take it personally, you can help hold space. You can help embrace them safely. You can build a relationship of trust where people can be vulnerable. And then you gradually grow them until that behavior starts to fall away. But it takes courage. It takes courage to hold people in their messy spaces.
And patience and sometimes strength and I guess I'm curious, right? So 145 people.
Yeah.
So how many people work with at TLC or Embrace Village? How many people work there?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I love our model, David, because it takes a village, right? That if you really think about that process, so we bring in, let's say, a needy mommy, a mommy who's had real exposure to trauma, who's struggling to parent her children. In our community are many needy mommies, but mommies who aren't all having a bad.
Anyway, I don't quite remember where we were, but no, Emma was speaking about her. So how big a problem is the problem you're trying to solve, in recognizing that, you know, anytime any kid, well, maybe anytime anyone, but certainly anytime any child is not being cared for, it's a huge problem. But sort of setting that aside, Is it a huge problem in South Africa? Children who are abandoned, children who are sort of fending for themselves, children who are just simply not cared for?
It's a really huge problem, David. So the statistics of abandonment alone are that there are 10,000 abandonments that happen in a year, but only 1/3 of those children survive abandonment. So 2/3 pass away because of abandonment and the other 1/3 survive, which leaves you about 3,000 children coming into the system annually who will require families or institutional care for the rest of their lives. It's a massive number. Then you add to that children who are neglected, who are with other caregivers, so children who aren't in the system, recorded in the system, but who are being cared for by teachers or neighbors or church bodies, things like that. So the statistics are very hard to gather, but poverty is massive and we've normalized it. So it's a real problem because it's so excessive. The tiers of poverty are like, can you have a meal today? And if you can, you're one of the luckier ones, you know, like it's really, really harsh.
Yeah, I would say from a statistic that I've heard, 50% of the population in South Africa is in poverty.
50, 50, 50. Yeah.
And the poverty statistic or the minimum wage here is $220 a month. So most of the families, so when we did our little data capture for our intake of the center, 81% of our families are surviving on $0 to $200 a month. And that's usually families of three people, either two children and one mother, or possibly both parents and one child. But it's really hard. If you think about paying rent because people can't own homes, you know, they often are living in informal settlements, but they still have to rent the shack that they're in because they don't own the land because they're largely not South African. So there's a whole lot like a black market property system that goes on there. And it's terrible. The advantage that people take of foreigners and of impoverished people, women who have to exchange sexual favors in order to survive, like keep a roof over their head. And then they end up pregnant and then the child is, you know, neglected. It's a cycle of devastation and we have to do something about it, which is really what we're aiming to try and change.
And when Pippa says informal settlements, I just kind of want to paint a picture. Imagine a dirt floor and imagine steel or plastic or cardboard and then a roof. That is an informal settlement. A latrine, right. A bathroom is shared amongst many. There is no running water. Usually you have to walk for the running water. And in South Africa, our running water is sometimes turned off and not always the cleanest. And can be filled with E. coli and other things you shouldn't be drinking.
What percentage of the population live in the situation you're describing? Not that you necessarily have to have that information, but so I'm curious, is it widespread?
It is widespread. Yeah. And the statistics are hard to come by because, of course, it doesn't look good on our statistics to have this huge disparity. But South Africa is known as having the most disparate population demographic, from the poorest in the world to the richest. It's crazy. And the gap in the middle is massive. So it's really big. But from our local area, I can tell you that we have a population of minimum 10,000. So they believe 10 to 20,000 people living in an informal settlement just around the corner, and another 200,000 living on our western border. So TLC is like a little utopia in the middle of real devastation. And we have a waiting list almost double what our capacity is. So with the right resource, we could expand our project and, you know, create maybe some models of assistance in a different way. But at the moment, we're resource constrained. So we have a maximum, we're full to capacity, and in fact, slightly more. But the waiting list is double.
And what does the facility look like? Is it do you leave your home and you go to a place? Or is it attached to your home or what? What is it?
I'm very fortunate. We have three sort of separate properties, but they are all within walking distance of each other. Two are adjoining and one is sort of across the road. And so we use all three properties to build our project. Remember, people have different needs. Some people need more socialization and others need a bit of time to just reflect. Children need a particular kind of environment. And so we use the different spaces to the best that we can, taking the children from the mothers into our early childhood development center in the mornings, allows them to be freed up for some skills development, some therapy, depending on what they need. So we try and split the community amongst the three spaces. And it works very well because you end up being able to focus in those areas. And so it looks agricultural. So we've got quite a lot of land. We grow vegetables. It's very lot of grass and trees. It's very natural. The house aesthetic that we've chosen is largely wooden houses. So like little log cabins, it creates that sense of earthy connection that people really need and that homely comfort. It's also not such a stretch for our people coming from informal settlements. It doesn't feel quite as or intimidating as a proper brick and mortar structure. Although we do have those, they're not the main body of where we work. So we've really been blessed. I can't say it was really by design, but it's just worked out that way, that as we were putting these things in place, they just worked for what we are ending up doing now. I mean, it's incredible to think that we built this facility actually for our residential childcare model. And now we don't do any of that, but the facility works beautifully for what we are are doing. We have
and is there an age? Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to
No, I was, I wanted you to finish, sorry.
Sorry, so I was just gonna say, we have a program, of course, where the mothers attend on a daily basis, but we have a small program running where mothers who are homeless and are trying to, you know, parent their children, don't have options. They don't have community. They're often struggling with their documentation, and they don't have an income. So their options would be to live on the street with their children or to find a shelter of some sort. And so we piloted a project we call A Mother's Hope. And it's a 3-year commitment to families, mothers who have found themselves discharged from hospital with infants and no home to go to, where they come and they live with us. And we give them maternity support, we give them parenting training, therapy, interventions, and all with the aim that by the end of their time with us, which we call graduation, they'll be employable. Mm-hmm. So we have mothers who have done diplomas in education, we've done mothers who have done project management, we've got ones who are just skills related, so they're doing entrepreneurial work. And the idea is to build a financial base for them so that when they leave, they don't have to hook their life onto a provider who at some point will change the rules on them, which is mostly how these women have ended up in this situation in the first place. So it's a really life-changing strategy, and we see it like changing the destinies of people. They start off with this idea that their trajectory is so narrow and so hard, and we completely open up the opportunities for them just by giving them space and time and love, and it's magic.
It sounds it. Is there an age group that you like? We, you know, we only work with kids up to the age of 14 or whatever it is. Is there, or do you focus? Do you try to focus on the youngest kids, or you know, whoever's in need can walk in the door?
So people do just walk in the door all the time. But our skill set, of course, is related to children under 6 largely. But a village doesn't look like that. So we work with all the elements of a village. In fact, we've even got a program for the elderly who come and visit and give the babies cuddles, and they give the mothers some wisdom and advice. And we're building community across the generations. But it's small steps where we can and how we can manage. We're very, very flexible. Like we are fluid in terms of what need is being presented today and how best do we meet that need. And we just roll with whatever that is. But the basic tenet, of course, is that it's easier to build strong men than it is to fix broken ones. So let's start as young as possible and do as much as we can to make sure that the foundation they're getting is solid, because we know from science that the resilience you can build into a child before they are 3, it will stand the test of time. So for us, that's a huge focus, is mothers who are still expecting their babies, remove the stress, give them what they need, make sure that they feel capacitated to be good moms, and then help them do that, at least for those first 3 years. And then after that, you can pretty much rest assured that the foundation you laid is a good one. If we can do that, that is a real win. So for us, that's a really a big part of what we do. But of course, you can't do it without all the other parts. And there are lots of broken parts. So we're just putting it together as best we can, like pieces of a puzzle.
Yeah. You know, you made, I apologize for my ignorance, but you made reference before to the numbers of people who are not South African, right? And they're struggling getting their papers. So what is that about?
So South Africa,
where are the immigrants from? What, are there a lot of them?
Yeah. South Africa has got so many layers of challenges, one of which is that our reputation in the African continent is one of wealth, because, of course, we had the gold mines, we had huge economic investment, and after apartheid, we were seen as having a streets paved of gold. That idea has really permeated all the way up north of Africa. And anyone who watches global news will know that Africa has got some real problems, from climate change disasters to political instability to massive gender-based disparities, like huge problems. So people come to South Africa seeking a better life, seeking hope, the same way they do in the States, I'm sure. They believe that we will offer them opportunities they can't get at home. The problem is that we also have a lot of tribalism, a lot of xenophobia. So although our borders are porous because we have poor policing and, you know, problems with immigration, we end up absorbing a lot of people into the communities who then, if you're talking about a female in this instance, for example, she will come to South Africa and she'll immediately hook herself onto a provider, someone who can give her a safe place to stay in exchange for whatever favors he requires. The problem comes in that a lot of South African traditionally male mindset is not around safe sex. So you'll have no condoms, you'll have no birth control, you'll have very traditional mindset, a lot of violence. The women end up pregnant and they're no longer desirable. So they get kicked out with their infant. And in African cultures, abortion and birth control are they're problematic topics. So the mothers will carry their children, but then collapse. There'll be no way to sustain their family. So abandonment is then the next sort of trauma that is experienced. So it really is systemically a big problem. And for us, we just see human beings. We don't see paperwork. We don't see tribes and nationalities. It's really, what do you need? And can I meet that need? If I can, I'm going to do that. And I'm not going to ask about all the other stuff. And it's not my battle to fight. I would love to be able to say that we could live in a just world where everything worked fairly. But I can't fight that battle. All I can do is be kind to the people who walk through my door and hope that the world will be a little bit gentler for it.
Emma, I mean this as a serious question. It's going to sound facetious, but given that, given what Pippa just described, why the hell did you end up in South Africa?
My parents and everyone else asked me that too. I don't know. I saw a need. I first came here on a study abroad with SMC. And I was just really taken aback by the history about the apartheid history, and then diving deeper, learning about the HIV epidemic here and how it spread here and how it's still spreading here and how it's so different than the HIV epidemic in America. I mean, it affects young women and children. I mean, thank God for ARVs. But now we see, because of ARVs prior, we see a loss of a generation. And we see a loss of a generation. What I mean is, well, let's say 10 years ago, the people that were dying of HIV, their kids were being raised by their grandparents. And these grandparents were the ones who were in apartheid. So they didn't have the proper education. They didn't have the proper foundation. Mm-hmm. They had trauma. And then they were raising these children without knowing how to move on from this. And I think that need just really brought me here. And then when I came back in 2018, I volunteered at two children's homes that were nothing like TLC. These were appalling, the amounts of human rights violations I saw at these children's homes that do have registration and are funded by the government is insane. I mean, just the politics. And that what really brought me back. And then I came in 2022 to do hospice work out here because I'm certified in palliative massage or hospice massage, so end-of-life massage. And then I met my husband and then I met TLC. I mean, the country, despite all of its problems, it's beautiful. I mean, you go out and it is beautiful outside. We have sunshine. We have pretty good weather most of the time besides winter. The people are really nice. I mean, I personally have not faced any discrimination or crime. Well, the people are amazing and they just want to love and be loved. And if you're able to do that, it's a pretty awesome place. I mean, yes, it's really hard. I mean, driving to TLC, I pass two townships and I see struggling moms and I see teen moms and I see little six-year-olds walking to school by themselves. And I see kids in the back of buses without seatbelts and car seats, and mom and dad are having the kid in the front seat with a cigarette in the hand. And you're just like, oh my God, this is a public health nightmare. But despite all these problems, it's a beautiful country. And I mean, the people are awesome. And I mean, I love it here. I mean, it feels like home. I mean, I was in LA for 2 weeks and it was hard for me. I felt very disconnected because I've been here for the last 2 years and I've adjusted.
Well, being in LA, I mean,
it's hard. It's hard.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. I now live in Wyoming, rural Wyoming. And you know, going back to Los Angeles, it's sort of shocking. How did I do this for that long? But you just mentioned the education piece. So you're working with these young kids. Are you also providing education or do they go off to school? And how does that work?
So we are allowed to provide early childhood development education, which is up to age 6. In South Africa, you start first grade at age seven. So we can do mostly up to grade 6. And remember, these are children who if it wasn't for us, they would get no ECD, no early childhood development. So we're navigating our registration for that. But in the meantime, we are allowed to provide it, largely because the parents attend. So it's not as if we're taking the children away from the parent and, you know, removing them from that security. The parents attend. So it's safe for the children. But part of what we're kind of finding a niche in is these children who fall through the cracks. It's so interesting. Children who have got significant trauma. And, you know, trauma affects your ability to learn and to progress academically. So unless we deal with the trauma, they're never going to progress academically. And South Africa has no resource. They don't have enough special schools. They don't have remedial, like, government-funded remedial education streams, anything like that. So unless you're in the mainstream, you're not in school. And it's ridiculous. You can't just like sideswipe a whole generation of traumatized children from education. So the consequence is that the government keeps them in school, but our pass rate or our pass requirement is 30% of what you learn that will suffice to pass you to the next grade. So children are promoted, they're condoned, you know, into the next grade, and they can't read. By grade 11, they still can't read. So we've found a little niche for children coming to our center on like a homeschooling basis, where they can get some trauma therapy, some play therapy, a little bit of the grounding, go back to the foundations and fundamentals, and then hopefully reintegrate into school later. But at the moment, we're not doing more harm than the government, so it's a win. But it's, you know, our goal is to get it registered as some kind of, you know, so it's got a safeguard.
And I want to say, I mean, also in schools here, the languages that are mandatory, most of the schools, they're either English or Afrikaans. And Afrikaans, I don't want to say is the white language, but it's the white language. And it's not the language that is mostly spoke these days. I mean, we have 12 official languages. So kids that are raised in a Zulu or Xhosa household then go to an Afrikaans school, they're not going to do well. They don't have that foundation of Afrikaans or that foundation of English if they're in their English school. So we see that a lot of the kids that come to our ECD, the first time they heard English was from us, and they're learning English, and that's, you know, going to help propel them future. I mean, I have a great example. There's a story. A mom came to Pippa when she was pregnant and she needed help. So we're like, okay, cool. So we adopted her into our Mother's Hope. She doesn't stay with us, but she does help with, we give her services. When she was in labor, I became really close with her. And when she was in labor, her son came to stay with me because he was on school holiday. He's 7 years old and doesn't speak any English. And he stayed with my husband and I for 5 nights. We had to use nonverbal communication. Everything out of his mouth was, yes. Are you hungry? Yes. It's time to go to bed, would look at me. And then I would, you know, do symbols of bed and sleep and show the pillows and the blankets. And then he, you know, got it. But at 7 years old, he doesn't speak English. What's going to happen if he goes to an English speaking school, which his mom wants him to do, because that's the best possible for his future.
Sure.
So, I mean, we see it all the time. And when Pippa was talking about people with learning difficulties, just speaking on my behalf, I have auditory and visual learning disabilities. I had ADHD. I couldn't read until third grade. If my parents didn't push tutoring and other social services on the schools to get me an IEP, I would be one of these statistics. I would be one of these falling through the cracks students if I didn't have parents that were educated enough to get me the help I needed. So it's really near and dear in my heart to help these children because they need it.
Something else just to point out is that children get labeled here as having learning disabilities when actually it's a language barrier or a trauma issue. So we've got children who, like Emma says, haven't spoken English. They get enrolled in an English-speaking schooling in first grade. They don't have the phonics. They don't have any understanding of even the names for shapes and things like that. Then they get assessed by an educational psychologist in order to get them into a special stream of schooling. And it's insane because what they need is a bridging class. They need an aid class that will help them get onto the right track. But the state is just not spending the resources they need to do that and to equip children properly. So it's, again, you know, this idea of a village. We can't help everybody. We just don't have the resource, but we can help the ones that are here. And we know that if our child leaves from here to go to school, she doesn't leave our village. She's still part of our village. She can return here and get the extracurricular, the tutoring, the emotional support that she might need in order to succeed. But people don't have that. They don't have villages anymore. They don't have people that they can lean on with extra experience, advice, resource, wisdom, whatever it is that they need. And that's what we're trying to create here.
Well, I'm looking at the time and I don't want to take too much of yours, but I think clearly what you're doing is, for lack of another way of saying it, it's God's work, right? And I'm not sure I believe in God, but if I did, that would be the work. And what else do you want people to know about it, about what you're doing that we haven't spoken about?
Generally, people feel the truth of this. They understand the same way you say it's God's work, it's good work. They recognize that this is what the world needs if we want a better world. And so my always, whenever I have the opportunity to speak to people, I like to finish with an exhortation that says, you can make a difference. The problem feels huge. The problem feels unmanageable and insurmountable and irreparable and all those things that the media would want us to believe, that there's just no salvaging this. But there is, because every single life we can weave back into the social fabric is a part that strengthens it. And just like a net, if you take a fishing net with huge squares, a lot can get through and it's not as secure. But the tighter we can weave our communities, the tighter we can weave our families, the stronger society will be. And so please, people can get involved from the tiniest way to the hugest ways. There are real ways to impact the society and the world we want to live in today. It doesn't have to be with us, although, we appreciate every kind of part of support that comes our way. We recognize that in every community, this need exists, the need for community, the need for collaboration, the need for comfort, connection, contribution. They exist in every community. So do what you can, do what you feel called to do, but don't do nothing. Anything that you can do will make a difference. The ocean is made up of drops.
Yes, indeed. The ocean is made up of drops, indeed. Will you be sure, one of you, to send me to, like, so somebody may want to donate, right? I mean, so how do they do that, et cetera? So you don't have to say it right now, but if you send it to me, I'll make sure it's on the screen and in the notes. And
we'll do that.
What a privilege I feel like you've given me learning about this. And so thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryant here on LA Talk Radio.